This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information, brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association. My name is Frank Rossi. I'm the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and the following are observations and recommendations for the week of September 12th, 2011. Well, nothing like having a storm pull the Gulf of Mexico into the upper atmosphere and dump it on the Northeast, particularly upstate New York. The widespread flooding from the most recent storm after Irene can be described only as historic, creating serious flooding, destroying roads and bridges in the interior Northeast. All of this made many turf issues seem minor this week, except for those battling submerged turf. Standing water on turf at this time of year can be devastating, but often pales in comparison to the siltation of land from floods. The top dressing of fine particles on turf areas works to seal off the surface, presenting adequate infiltration and then a long-term reduction in soil oxygen levels. Brush, broom, blower, and then coring to reduce the amount of silting and to break through the layer will help, but is all very laborious. Some drying will help, but be prepared to increase coring amounts to mitigate layering problems. Other questions about renovation, compost amendments, and weed control are typical at this time of year, and when the soils dry out, some of these practices can be resumed. Avoid applying anything to saturated soils to minimize risk of leaching and runoff, and break through the crabgrass layer to get seed in contact with the soil. Before we do the weather, I'll make a couple of program announcements. Our Sustainable Landscapes webinar series continues on Monday, September 19, 2011, from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. You can get information of this on the Cornell Turfgrass website. And the New York State Turfgrass Association Winning Fields, Winning Fairways program will be held Thursday, October 6, 2011, from 7 a.m. to 3:45 at both Nazareth College and Irondequoit Country Club in Rochester, New York. And again, you can get information on both of these at the Cornell Turfgrass website. A warm week last week with most about 3 to 6 above normal, except to the south that was closer to normal. Heat stress was more widespread than had been experienced since July. Growing degree day values continue to accumulate ahead of normal as typical accumulations decline rapidly at this time of year. Most are more than 3 weeks ahead of normal. Except for extreme western areas of the region, most received between 4 and 10 plus inches of rain this week from the remnants of Tropical Storm Lee. Central Pennsylvania and the Hudson Valley, about 2 to 4 inches. Most of New Jersey, 3 to 5 inches. Binghamton, more than 7 plus inches. And ET levels were not much help with drying at about a half an inch. Disease predictions, you can expect widespread high risk for brown patch early in the week with dollar spot and foliar anthracnose high risk for most of the week for most of the region. With ideal temps and adequate moisture, we fear that this disease cycles are still not done. At least they will not be exacerbated by environmental stretches such as high heat. High pressure will begin to dominate this coming week in the forecast, but still leave us in an unstable and showery period. After a warm start to the week, expect a cool down to more normal temps during the day, but elevated nighttime temps about 5 degrees above normal. The long-term models are still calling for extended trough over the east, keeping us in a cool and wet pattern. The Cornell Cooperative Extension update begins with Walt Nelson's Western New York report. And from the consumer line, homeowners are asking about renovation protocol resulting from chinch bugs and sod webworm damage. Queries as to fall lawn fertilization procedures, mammal damage, likely brought on by foraging for white grubs, and still no reports of flights in the invasive cranefly area. The Westchester report from Rick Harper and Jerry Giordano, lawns are green, but additional rainfalls continue to create soggy conditions in turf areas with poor drainage as contractors try to repair / reseed on dry days. Call still report large patches of dead turf on lawns that appear annually but are described as worse during the last two seasons. Where disease is not revealed, excavation often shows subsurface rock at several inches, prompting the need for more organic matter and selection of finer tall fescue rather than bluegrass or attempted remediation. Grub reports continue to be low, while crabgrass seed heads are very obvious. Severe injury to one landscape occurred when broadleaf herbicide was mixed at the wrong concentration and applied to the wrong property. The diagnostic update from Rich Buckley at Rutgers University talks this week about fairy rings. The laboratory was without power for a couple of days, and my own home was without for several, Rich reports. The one thing that struck me during my travels was the huge number of fairy rings in the turf. The rains of Irene not only brought flooding, but also stimulated a massive bloom of fungal fruiting bodies. Most of what I saw were type 2 fairy rings, those that cause simulated rings of turf grass and produce much mushrooms, but do little damage to the grass. Everywhere I looked, I saw massive rings or ribbons of slightly greener grass pockmarked with large white mushrooms or puffballs. It is easy to see why someone from the Middle Ages would attribute the presence of these things to some metaphysical phenomenon. Speaking of metaphysics, please don't eat wild mushrooms. I remember clearly a laboratory client who, in an attempt to reach a higher level of consciousness, ate a large white fairy ring fungus, Lepiota, and wound up with severe gastrointestinal distress. The guy brought the mushroom to the laboratory for identification because he lacked medical insurance. Proper identification of a mushroom is in the realm of an educated guess rather than one with a high degree of certainty. We figured it was Lepiota and thought he wouldn't die. Thought he was in the process, but sent him to the emergency room nonetheless. And that's the point. Trained mycologists are never certain about the identity of most wild mushrooms, so a layman has almost no chance of a proper identification. We also got a sample of fairy ring in the laboratory. The sample came from a turf manager in southeast Pennsylvania who manages bankgrass tennis courts. His fairy ring was type 1. Type 1 rings are those associated with turf death. One of the ways type 1 fungi kill turf is by creating hydrophobic conditions in the root zone of a turf stand. The grass in the dry spot subsequently wilts and dies. Hard to believe in this weather, but photos of the tennis courts indicate rather large rings of thin turf in the midst of several isolated dry spots. Fairy ring control for the type 1 ring centers on the preventing the dry spots, wetting agents, and surfactants. Management of a type 2 ring is focused on masking the ring with a little nitrogen or iron. Lastly, we'd be aware that temporary periods of flooding will cause turf to yellow and thin. All of those of you on the coast should not count out salt damage in evaluating poor performance turf areas post-tropical storms. And my Gazing in the Grass update begins with an EPA webinar on fertilizer and water quality. A free EPA Watershed Academy webcast titled Nitrogen and Phosphorus Lawn Fertilizers on Wednesday, September 21st from 2011 at 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Fertilizers, leaves, grass clippings, animal waste, and eroded soils are all sources of phosphorus and nitrogen. When they are swept or washed into the street or northeast or near a storm drain, they end up in your local lake or river where they can cause algal blooms and other water quality problems. This webcast will highlight legislation passed by Minnesota, Michigan, and the Chesapeake Bay states, which includes us here in New York, to restrict the use of lawn fertilizer, and will share key lessons learned. The webcast is one in a series of the important issues of nutrient pollution. Please register for this webcast at the EPA website, epa.gov/watershedwebcast. Participants are encouraged to download webcast presentations prior to the webcast at the same URL. Webcast participants are eligible to receive a certificate of attendance. Slit trenches for sports fields. With all the moisture we've been getting in, it is a good time to think about solutions. Pam Sherrod at Ohio State University has an excellent post about slit trenching of athletic fields. Many sports are played in the spring, fall, and winter months when there are rainy periods. On native soils, this often leads to muddy playing conditions because many native soils do not drain well. Since the 1930s, there have been options for improving the drainage capability of native soil fields. These options have included, in order of relative cost, complete field reconstruction of a sand-based field with the percentage sand 85% or higher by weight. Sand-amended fields, whereby sand is blended with the native soil or on or off-site to bring the sand percentage of a field to about 75% or more by weight. Sand slit drains installed in the surface of the field and annual sand top dressing programs to gradually improve soil texture. Sand slits, let's talk about this for a second, as Pam did at Ohio State University. There are specific pieces of equipment designed to produce sand slit drains and leave a true playing surface. Slit drain fields are designed whereby surface water bypasses the native soil so that the local soil has less of an influence on drainage rates. There's a wide range of slitting techniques. For example, a common specification in the UK is sand slits 2 inches wide, 10 inches deep on 3-foot spacings. Most importantly, the slits must transmit surface water through the native soil surface to a more permeable material underneath, such as a gravel layer or permeable fill-over pipe drains. The slit runs perpendicular to the pipe drains. Two problems can occur with slit drain fields. One, when the permeable material does not come into contact with the sand slit, that is, there is a soil layer between the sand slit and the underlying permeable material. Or two, when the slit is not kept directly at the field surface and the slit is sealed off by adjacent native soil. This can occur rapidly, even during one game if field conditions are very wet. To prevent the latter, a heavy annual sand top dressing program has to be initiated to make sure that the slits are not capped off over time. Research by the Sports Turf Research Institute in England has indicated that these types of field can accommodate 6 hours of adult play per week. 95 to 125 events per season. In addition, they have suggested that if managed correctly, a slit drain field should last about 7 years before needing to be slit again. A note about fall fertilization. Our latest research indicates that the September to October period remains the best for late season fall fertilization that maximizes turf quality and minimizes fall leaching. Fall nitrogen promotes good root development, enhances storage of energy reserves, and extends color retention in cool season turf. Most of the benefits from late fall nitrogen will be seen next spring and summer with earlier greenup, improved turf density, and improved tolerance to spring diseases such as red thread and pink patch and reduced weeds. There are many fertilizer choices available. Organic, inorganic, and synthetic organic products are all available. As with all plants, turf grasses cannot tell the difference between sources of nutrients. Some products contain high amounts of slow-release N, while others contain none. Although there are exceptions to the rule, it is good practice to use products with a greater percentage of slow-release nitrogen sources during spring and summer months and a greater percentage of quick-release nitrogen sources in the fall. For the late-season application, pick a product that is mostly quick-release nitrogen, such as urea or ammonium sulfate, and consider applications in the half to three-quarters of a pound of actual N applied between September 15th and October 15th. And be sure soils are on the drier side and avoid application of pavement. And finally, a note about rust. Early signs of rust are beginning to be seen. Low fertility, in particular nitrogen, and low water availability slow down turf growth, allowing rust to develop. Seasons with excess rain may have rust outbreaks due to the depletion of available nitrogen. Cool nights with heavy dew and light, frequent rainfall add to the ideal conditions for rust to develop. Warm, cloudy, humid weather followed by hot, sunny weather also favors rust development. Kentucky bluegrass, perennial ryegrass, and tall fescues are all affected depending on cultivar. Thank you for joining me for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi, the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science here at the Department of Horticulture at Cornell University, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.